Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Marco Meglio, editor with Neurology Live. In this episode, we've got Dr. James Beck, Senior Vice President and Chief Scientific Officer of the Parkinson Foundation. He spoke on a recently published Medicare analysis study that revealed critical gaps and disparities in access to Parkinson disease care. Specifically, he talked about the lack of movement disorder specialists, the need for mental health professionals, and ways to ensure access for those of color and those in rural areas. Let's dive in.
In our study was really take a look at both Medicare and Medicare Advantage data from 2019. That's significant because it's right before the pandemic and gives us a really good sense of how people are engaging with the healthcare community. And so we analyzed that looking for understanding how many people with Parkinson's there were, how they were engaging with their clinicians, who were they seeing as part of that process, and using that to really understand based upon that information, where are people located? What are their race, ethnicity? And using the sum of that to understand what does access to medical care for a person with Parkinson's look like in the United States today? And using that as a bellwether on how we as an organization and more largely as a community should proceed in order to really engage healthcare community on behalf of people with Parkinson's.
Among the actual specific findings that you guys have, what sort of stands out the most to you? What are some of the biggest, you know, greatest clinical take-home points that the clinical community should be aware of?
The biggest take-home message is that most people with Parkinson's aren't seeing a movement disorder neurologist for their care. Only about 9% of people with Parkinson's are able to see someone who has that specialized skill training. The next largest group are seeing a general neurologist, which is fantastic. But there are a lot of people who were seeing a primary care physician or within the year we analyzed, didn't see a medical professional at all for their Parkinson's care. And so that's concerning as part of that process. And so you know, as a result of that, one of our goals is to really think about how we as an organization engage with other medical professionals. We want to engage more with a general neurologist. They are really the front lines of a person with Parkinson's who's there as part of that care team to provide excellent care for a person with PD. However, they don't have the benefit of having 2 years of training just on Parkinson's disease and movement disorders. They see a variety of different diseases. So what can we do to educate people with Parkinson's to get the most out of their visit? Visits are very short. They want to make certain that they're very efficient and get what they're looking for. And then how can we help provide additional support and training to the general neurologist community? Give them extra tips and insights, opportunities for CME that they can use to provide even better care for their patients.
Well, that actually kind of leads into my next question is sort of, you talked a little bit about it at the end of there, but how can we sort of make up for the lack of movement disorder specialists? You know, how can we sort of take what we have and use our resources, our tools, our clinicians a little bit more efficiently?
That's a great question. So there are only about 650 to 700 or so movement disorder neurologists in North America. It includes Canada and the United States. So with 1 million people in the U.S., clearly is not enough. In fact, there's also a shortage of general neurologists as well. And that's another story to go into. But you know, what we really need to do is recognize that the people on the front lines are not the highly specialized trained clinicians. It's these other clinicians, particularly neurologists, and provide them with the tools that they need as part of that process. raise awareness about the foundation. And we have a lot of tools that can answer basic questions that can help reduce physician burden, either as handout materials to provide details about Parkinson's, or even a helpline, which can handle basic questions about a person's Parkinson's disease and help alleviate a lot of the concerns that especially newly diagnosed individuals may have as part of the process. And that can, perhaps offload some of the burden from what could be a busy medical office can deal with a lot of these questions and ensure that a person with Parkinson's gets heard and gets the help that they need as part of the process.
We're going to take a quick break from our conversation with Dr. Beck to keep you up to date on the latest developments in neurology. Welcome to the Neurology News Minute. Here's what you may have missed since our last episode. First, on August 24th, the FDA approved Sandoz's and Polpharma Biologics injection treatment natalizumab, the first biosimilar to the approved formulation of natalizumab for the treatment of adults with relapsing forms of multiple sclerosis. With the indication, the therapy can be utilized for patients with clinically isolated syndrome, relapsing remitting disease, and active secondary progressive disease. Days later, top-line data from the Phase 3 LELANTOS-2 trial showed that pamrevlumab, in combination with systemic corticosteroids, failed to improve ambulatory function in ambulatory patients with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. FibroGen announced that they are in the process of assessing the totality of the data in order to decide the next steps and plan to communicate the full results of the study in an upcoming medical forum. And finally, on September 6th, the FDA issued a complete response letter to AstraZeneca for the supplemental biologics license application of ravulizumab as a potential treatment for patients with neuromyelitis optica spectrum disorder. In its response, the agency did not raise concerns about the provided evidence for the therapy. Rather, it requested modifications to enhance the risk evaluation and mitigation strategy program. The requested modifications were in reference to validate patients' meningococcal vaccination status or prophylactic administration of antibodies prior to receiving treatment. For more information about these stories, head to neurologylive.com or you can check out the corresponding link in the show notes. And now, back to Dr. Beck. So there was one other thing that kind of stuck out to me in the findings was talking about the lack of mental health professionals, even though the fact that, as a society over the last couple of years, we really have started to take more notice towards mental health and really make it more of a priority. So why haven't we seen mental health professionals be utilized as much in this space? Is it mainly just because of a lack of funding? Is that sort of what it comes down to at the end of things?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And one of the things I have to say is what's interesting about this finding we had in our paper is something that we've replicated independently through our own centers of excellence, through our Parkinson's Outcome Project. We too there saw utilization rate in the single digit of percentages, 2-4%. When we know that a person with Parkinson's, on average, about 30% of them are experiencing symptoms of depression, if not full-blown clinical depression. Why there's this disparity in recognition of the disease itself, yet providing the care is something we haven't really been able to decipher. One of the things we've done as an organization is see if we can facilitate that process. So as part of our outcomes project, we created a study involving five different sites in both Canada and the US to see if we could implement routine screening for depression as part of a Parkinson's movement disorder neurology clinic. We were able to implement that to various levels. I mean, every clinic is a little bit different as part of that process. And we certainly were able to increase the screening as part of it, but it still remains a very big hurdle in order to once you've screened them, to get people to care as part of the process. One of the things we see a lot in the US is that when it comes to mental health professionals, not a lot of them are willing to take Medicare as a form of payment as part of it. There are not a lot of them who specialize in Parkinson's disease on top of that, or who have good familiarity with it. And so that creates a bit of a disconnect as a result of it. So I think one of the key things to do is to really raise awareness about this issue with people with Parkinson's. Let them know that depression, mental health symptoms are maybe common in Parkinson's disease, but they are don't require a unique treatment paradigm. Medications that work for depression in the general population will work by and large for a person with Parkinson's as well. So they can seek treatment. They may have be able to get medications from other providers if their general neurologist or their clinician who's treating them for Parkinson's disease isn't really able to come through for them or hasn't even recognized it as part of it. So I think recognition internally, both for the person with Parkinson's as well as their clinicians, is a key first step. And so if we can raise awareness around that, then we can really start tackling some of these other issues as part of it. Ultimately, I guess it really comes down to awareness issues. We often talk about when it comes to mental health.
Are there a group of patients, or are there a lot of patients that maybe downplay or fully don't understand the effects of their depression, or maybe even don't even realize that they're fully depressed? I'm just curious.
Yeah, that's certainly the case. Many of the symptoms of depression are actually symptoms of Parkinson's disease. The lack of interest in things, apathy, tiredness, fatigue, those are often things that go along with depression and part of Parkinson's. So it can be for the uninitiated something difficult to differentiate whether I'm experiencing PD symptoms or is it because I'm depressed or is it both as part of that. And what we do know is alleviating some of these mental health issues that people face lead to better overall quality of life for a person with Parkinson's. So they're getting that treatment for their mental health condition. It can lead to better response to their Parkinson's medication, and they can function at a higher level as part of it. As you can imagine, depression is something that can really weigh a person down overall and really changes their perspective on things. And being able to address that, I think, head on is a really a positive way with which to do it. We just need to get that awareness out there and so that people who do have these symptoms can get treated.
Dr. Beck, I have one last question for you. So going forward, switching gears a little bit, not talking about some of the mental health stuff, but some of the more access issues going forward, how can we ensure that patients of color and those who are in more rural areas are able to access recommended services such as physical, occupational, or speech therapies?
So I think this is a critical issue moving forward. When it comes to geographic underrepresentation or people who are from rural communities trying to get access to care, this is where telemedicine can actually play a role to a certain extent. It's amazing what can happen via Zoom, and I've begun to get accustomed to that. So many either continuing levels of service or even sometimes, the initial visit can occur via Zoom. Often, you often need to get in person to get that initial evaluation, but it's the continuation, which can be the real difficult thing for people who may have to travel quite a distance to gain access to the services. When it comes to people of color, that remains a tough nut to crack. It's something that we're working on in order to address it. And I think it's important that we do as part of it. So we're looking to educate people of color to learn more about Parkinson's disease, to better learn more about what's available in the community, get them engaged in clinical research so that as we talk about awareness about what the disease is, what the treatments are, they can be focused on letting their colleagues know, letting their friends and family know that physical therapy is important for a person with Parkinson's. Getting evaluated by a speech pathologist can be really helpful. So I think the awareness remains half the battle. What is that the G.I. Joe cartoon would always say, knowing's half the battle and now you know. And it truly is the case. Knowledge can be very empowering and can allow people to take action in their own hands. It's difficult for one organization, even one as committed as we are, to change the medical community. But what we can do is educate people with Parkinson's, regardless of their race, regardless of where they live, to know what the needs are in order to live their best lives possible and give them the tools with which to advocate in a variety of settings.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.